So we are discussing the question of Eliyahu HaNavi's presence at the Seder. I titled this the Redemption Haggadah. You can take a guess why we might want to think about Eliyahu HaNavi's involvement in the Leil HaSeder and the Pesach experience as one relating to redemption. And we'll develop this idea as we go along. So there's a general debate about who the author of the Haggadah is. It's a historical debate. It's a question of whether the Haggadah was compiled by one individual or a number of individuals, or we obviously know that large sections of the text of the Haggadah come from the Mishnah, Masechet Psachim, the Mishnah, the Gemara, and other sections were perhaps added on later or added in later. There's obviously research on this, and there's ancient Haggadot that you can go and see in museums that are from hundreds or over 1,000 years ago. And you could see what kinds of differences maybe there were from then to now. But it is a little bit of a mystery. You know, usually you have the name of the author. Here today, it's just the author of the commentary on that Haggadah, which last I heard, other than the Torah, the Haggadah is the second most commented on Jewish text. So it's a pretty... it's a pretty common text for people to talk about, but we don't actually know who the author or the compiler, if you want to call that person.
Who's our main guess? Do we have like a Zohar-style like guess?
Type sure, of I think there's, I don't know, good question. So there is no consensus. That we do know, there's no consensus, but what we have is one approach quoted by Rav Simcha Banim Pashischa, who was one of the Hasidic, great Hasidic masters, and quoted in a number of places, but here's one of the places where it was quoted in a Haggadah with the commentary of Higada Telebincha, that's in source number one. He writes, Sheshama mipeh hakadosh shel Rabbeinu hakadosh Rabbunim, mipashischa, asher hu makir me'alashon shel Haggadah. You know, we say in the Haggadah, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu. That's one of the sections, Hanemar Baggadah. This is a phrase, if you source it and try to find its original location, you will find it in a midrash called Tana Devei Eliyahu. The Tana, and it's quotes, teachings from Eliyahu HaNavi. Since this phraseology of Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu is found very commonly in Tana Devei Eliyahu, one of the suggestions is that our Haggadah was put together by none other than Eliyahu HaNavi. Now, we do know from our own Seder experience that Eliyahu HaNavi shows up, or his spirit shows up, to our Seder near the end. But that is near the end, and we might wonder what Eliyahu HaNavi has to do with the rest of the Haggadah, despite his appearance at the end. And he is, Eliyahu HaNavi is a mystical personality, a little bit of a mysterious type of person or personality in Jewish history, in Tanakh. So let's begin by trying to understand who he is really, and then we'll come back to Pesach to appreciate perhaps his role in the Seder itself. So one of the first things that we might want to look at is who Eliyahu was a part of, meaning which tribe he descends from. Very often in Tanakh, we'll be told the lineage of a prophet, which tribe they're from, which family they're from. Eliyahu HaNavi, we're never told what his lineage is. And in fact, there's a wide-ranging debate which tribe he comes from. So for example, in Snorri Summer 2, in Bereishit Rabbah, the Midrash here brings two different opinions. One says he comes from the tribe of Binyamin, and the other, Rabbi Noorai, Mar Mishal Gad, he comes from the tribe of Gad. There's a little bit of a back and forth. All of a sudden, Eliyahu HaNavi shows up, and he has a conversation with the two people who were arguing, and he says, "Amar le rabotenu, ma tem nechakim alai, ani bibnei banei shel Rachel ani. I come from the children of Rachel." So it could be Yosef, could be Binyamin, but Elyonavi is telling them where he comes from. That's one tradition.
Is Gad and Asher, are they the sons of Bilhah or Zilpah? I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know the difference.
Let's ask our friend over here.
Bilhah or Zilpah, Gad and Asher?
Sorry?
Gad and Asher, are they from Bilhah or Zilpah?
That's a good question.
I would say Bilhah.
Okay. I think the point is not like... I mean, if it is Bilhah, then it's not like, oh, I'm from the sons of Rachel. It's just like, why are you guys arguing? I'm just from Rachel. It doesn't matter which one I'm from.
All right, so one tradition. Then there's another tradition, Shmot Rabbah, source number 3, Eliyahu Yerushalmi haya, u'miyoshe lishkat ha-gazid haya, mikrach shel Yehuda haya. So, krach shel Yehuda could mean from the tribe of Yehuda, maybe, even though the tribes were split up there in Yerushalayim. And then in the Midrash Tehillim, there's another version that Eliyahu was a Kohen, and he came from Beit Aharon. And there's even a Gemara, Masechet Bava Metzia, here in source number 5, Rabbi Bar Avuha found Eliyahu Navi standing in a graveyard of non-Jews. He said to him, are you not a Kohen? Right? He said to him, what are you doing here? What's the reason that you're standing in a cemetery? So, meaning questioning his Kohen's not allowed to go into a cemetery, what's he doing there? So Rashi writes there in the Gemara, just underneath the English part, in source 5, the Ikal Amanda Amar Deliyahu Pinchas. There's this tradition that Eliyahu is a remake of Pinchas, who was the son, the grandson of Aharon, the son of Elazar. So he was a Kohen Gadol. That's how we know that he comes from the line of the Kohanim. So we have different traditions about Eliyahu's background. It's a little bit fuzzy. It's a little bit unclear about which tribe he came from, which gives us a window into the fact that it's very hard to figure out his actual identity. Not just this, in sources 6 and 7, I brought a series of psukim from the time that Eliyahu was actually a prophet recorded in Tanakh, and we see that Eliyahu Navi was not located in one specific place. He was always on the move. He didn't have a natural space that he was positioning himself. And you see, for example, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Gimel is the source number 6. Go from here and go to Nachal Krita Sharal Pnei Yardain. And then again, a few psukim later, he tells him to go to Tsarfata. And then, on Perek Yud Chet, he says to go to Har HaKarmel. And just a little bit later than that, in Be'er Sheva, and to go into the desert. And he's always on the move, and in so many ways, he's not tied down to one geographical location or another. So we have Eliyahu as a unidentified member of a member of an unidentified tribe. We have Eliyahu as, a member of an unidentified geographical location. This broadens our perspective on the fact that Eliyahu really does have this kind of mysterious nature to him. We can't determine his age because we know that he was born, but we don't really know how he left the world or if he left the world or how exactly it went on. Look in source number 7, you have the story where he went up in the Sa'ara HaShamayim, some kind of transported up into another realm. And you talk about, how there's a Gemara in Baba Batra that says that there were 7 individuals who cover all of history, starting with Adam, and then there was Metushelach, who knew Adam, so he lived 1,000 years later, but he knew Adam, and then the individual who knew him, the seventh person in the list is Eliyahu HaNavi, and he continues to live or to exist, some level or another. Eliyahu HaNavi went into the Gan Eden, which, whatever it means, again, all of these, that's source number 8, all of these different references are leading us to the notion that we're dealing with someone who is not your regular walk-of-the-run-of-the-mill type of individual.
Eliyahu going up in the Zara in Beit El, where Yaakov had the halom of the angels going up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Okay.
I'll let you explore it over Pesach.
I'm just pointing it out.
Let me know. We also have the very interesting portrayal of Eliyahu HaNavi, both in Tanakh, in contrast to his portrayal in Chazal. So, for example, in source number 9, I brought a few references here. You have the statement that he makes about himself. Kano kineti la'ashem elokei tzvakot. That was the time that the Nevi'ei HaBaal, the whole story over there. Eliyahu was a kanai. A kanai is a person who's zealous, a person who's very righteous and truthful and always making sure to carry out, you know, justice if it needs to be carried out. He was an individual. He was a person who took the initiative on his own, even to the extent that he did things when God hadn't commanded him to. And that's referenced here also in Source 9. You have the psukim from chapter 17 of Malachim Aleph. V'yom Eliyahu tishvim v'toshvei ha-gilad. Elachav chai Hashem elokei Yisrael sh'armati l'fanav m'yashanim ha'el ha-talmatar ki'im l'fi dvari. The rain in this town, in this place, is going to be according to me. And if you look in source number 10, you turn the page, you have a Gemara, Masechet Sanhedrin, that says, Amrile shalosh maftechot lo nimsu l'shaliach. There were three keys. This is agadic, but it also paints the picture, the depiction of who Eliyahu Navi was, his power, his God-given kind of power and permission. There were three keys that weren't given over to anybody else, meaning God carries these out himself. The one of life, the one of rain, and the one of Tchiyat HaMeitim, right? Revival of the dead. So the Gemara says, Yom of Shtayim biyad Talmid v'achat biyad Rav. Two were in the hands of the student, and one in the hands of the master. So who's the student? Eliyahu HaNavi. And Eliyahu HaNavi is called a kapdan. So Eliyahu has this image or personality of being very strict. Again, like we said, truthful, kanai, and that obviously relates to his relationship in the Midrashim, his relationship to Pinchas. Pinchas was the individual who stopped the two people from having a public act of sexual immorality in a public place, and Pinchas speared them, and the whole story over there. And God uses a similar language in that context to talk about Pinchas's actions as caring a lot about God's Torah, caring a lot about God's will. And again, everything Eliyahu HaNavi did was done in the context of truthfulness. Yet, when you look at the way that the rabbinic sources understood or analyzed Eliyahu HaNavi's personality, you don't get the same kind of picture as the way that he's depicted in Tanakh. So, for example, in Source 11 and 12, you have a mechilta in Parshat Bo that says Eliyahu tava kavod ha'av velo kavod ha'bein, which means that Eliyahu cared a lot and sought after the honor of the father, meaning Hashem, and didn't emphasize it in the same way when it came to the child, B'nai Yisrael, the Jewish people. So he was very interested in maintaining God's respect, and that was all these examples that we saw from before. But when it came to the Jewish people, Eliyahu HaNavi was more critical of how the Jews were going about their life, and in fact, he lost his power of nevuah because of this. That's what it says at the end of Source 11. Eliyahu was asked to go and appoint the new Navi, Elisha ben Shaphat, to anoint him as the new prophet instead of himself. So it says the words in the Navi are Navi tachtecha, a prophet in your place or under you, and that's explained as that Hashem is rejecting Eliyahu's job or his career, his role. Okay, so with all of this, there is a ton on him, and this is a fascinating question. Why does Eliyahu Navi show up at a bris? Why does Eliyahu Navi show up at a bris? Why does he come? What does that mean? Kisei Eliyahu, we have that chair in the shul for Eliyahu.
It seems pretty clear from the Shukid Rabbi Eliezer.
We didn't do it yet, but you looked ahead.
That he doesn't show up.
That he doesn't show up.
We're just basically, you know, wagging a finger at him.
Okay, it's a certain... what you might call...
take that.
Yeah, it's a certain... I don't call it a punishment or call it a message to Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi, his whole life was about maintaining the image, positive image of God. Anybody who was going against God, Eliyahu HaNavi was going to come and fight the good fight. That's why he's called a Kanai. When it came to the Jewish people, he was more critical about their practice, their belief, of the ways that they were living their lives. So Hashem comes to Eliyahu HaNavi, says, as a punishment for the rest of your life, you're going to have to show up at every single bris milah. It's a busy job, right? If you look in the Midrash, it's a beautiful language, but it's basically saying that in the second line, Sham nigla kodesh baruch hu amar lo malacha po Eliyahu, says, what are you doing here? Kano kineti, amar lo lo'olam atah mekaneh kinat... that was a story I mentioned before about Pinchas that was in the Shittim. Shenemar Pinchas ben Elzar ben Arkoin v'kan kaneta chayecha she'ein osin brit milah chatar ro'eh beinecha. No bris is going to happen until you show up. The bris won't happen until you're there. Mikan hitkinu chachamim lasot kisei echad mechubad l'malach habrit. He's the angel of the bris, and that chair represents Eliyahu's presence at every single bris. Shenikra Eliyahu Malach HaBris. He's called Malach HaBris, the angel of the bris. Umalach HaBris Asher Atem Chafetzim. So in a way, the message is Eliyahu, show up at every bris. What is Eliyahu supposed to see and learn when he comes to the bris? He's supposed to see, look, the Jewish people are still keeping the Torah. The Jewish people are keeping the mitzvot of Hashem. And that's supposed to be kind of a push. You know, Eliyahu, this is the Jewish people. They love the Torah, they love the mitzvot of Hashem. Now, if you take the way that Tanakh portrays Eliyahu's personality, and the way that Chazal portrays personality, you will find two very different kinds of images. For example, Source 13 is a Mishnah Masechet Ediot. And the Mishnah talks about who Eliyahu was. So the Mishnah says, I have a tradition from Yochanan ben Zakkai, who heard it from his teacher, and his teacher from his teacher, a lot of Moshe from Sinai, that Eliyahu will not come to declare people pure or impure, to distance, to make impure or people, or to bring them closer, but rather to distance those who are brought near by force, and to bring close those who are distanced by force. Rabbi Yehuda says his job is to bring people close, but not to make people distance. Rabbi Shimon says Eliyahu Navi's job is to resolve sfeikot, to resolve arguments. As we may be familiar with the language that the Gemara uses, teku. Teku is taf yud kuf vav, and it's an acronym, and it stands for anytime the Gemara has a question that's unresolved, it stands for Tishbi, which is Eliyahu's code name, Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu HaTishbi, Tishbite, if that's where he was from, perhaps. Yitaretz, so Taf, Yud, Yitaretz, Kushot, Ve...
Kashiot, Shelot.
Shelot, no, it's...
Vetshuvot.
Kushot, Vetshuvot.
It's Kushot, Shelot.
No, I think Ibayot.
I don't know, I've heard many.
Eliyahu's going to come in and resolve all the unresolvable issues. So that's what's being referenced here. Rabbi Shimon says Eliyahu's role is to bring, close. Again, you're getting an image of a person who's into peace, who's into harmony, who's into bringing people together, who's into bringing people in, not pushing people away, to resolving arguments. It's not the same kind of Eliyahu Navi who's portrayed in Tanakh. And Chazal say, he will not come to make distant or bring close, but to make peace in the world, as it says, right, this is the last psukim of Tanakh, right here in the end of the Mishnah. Nisholech lachem et Eliyahu Navi, right? V'neyam yavo, the big day, the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord. And he shall turn the heart of the father, heishiv lev avot al banim, lev banim al avotam. That's how the Tanakh ends, with these psukim. Description of what Eliyahu's job is going to be, and we come to understand, Chazal come to understand, this is a reference to the fact that Eliyahu is going to be the person who tells us that Mashiach is coming. That's what Eliyahu's kind of role in history is. And you have this connection, this is one of the passages in the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin, that's source 14, where you have one of the Tanaim, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. He meets Eliyahu Navi at the cave of Shimon Bar Yochai. Shimon Bar Yochai's, the cave is in the north, in Meron. So, or at least his grave is in Meron. They think that he was hiding somewhere nearby, a town called Piki'in. So that's one of the theories. Anyway, no one really knows for sure today, but that's what they think. So Yeshua ben Levi asks the prophet, he says, when is Mashiach coming? It's a great Gemara. He says, when is Mashiach coming? So he knew that Eliyahu Navi is supposed to be the person or the individual who's going to and now make the big announcement. So Eliyahu says, you should ask Mashiach yourself. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi found out where he could find him. So he goes, he finds him. It's a whole story. I cut this part out. They have this conversation. Shalom Aleichem, Mori, Rabbi, my master, my teacher. Rabbi Yeshua greets the Mashiach. Shalom Aleichem. And Mashiach says, when will my master appear? Rabbi Shuman Levi asks him, when will my master appear? So he says, today, even today. Meaning, I could show up today. And that's what Mashiach says, full of happiness and joy. Rabbi Yeshua returns to Eliyahu and he told him what Mashiach had said. So then Eliyahu explains to Rabbi Yeshua, Mashiach was speaking of the word today, mentioned the verse today, if you will listen to my voice today. Right? It's dependent. Mashiach's not just going to come of his own accord. It's going to be based on a reaction, perhaps. So, there's a great shift, as we see, a transformation or a shift of how Eliyahu Navi is described by Tanakh and how he's described in Torah Shebaal Peh. And suggested, all these sources, by the way, come from Shabbat HaGadol Drasha, and put it in the footnote, from Rabbi Taub, who was the rabbi at the Bayit. So he had a beautiful suggestion. He says, the last psukim in Tanakh are the psukim that tell us about Eliyahu's role in history. And in a way, though, it's a bridge. It's a transition from who Eliyahu was during his time as a prophet in Tanakh to who he is and who he will be for the Jewish people in the now and in the future. This individual who's going to herald and bring in the era of Mashiach, Tzidkenu. Interestingly enough, Pesach is the only, the Korban Pesach, that is the only mitzvah that where the Torah insists that a person must have a bris. It's an interesting connection between the two. So the Eliyahu that's at our Seder, right? The Eliyahu that comes to our Seder is going to be more in the Mashiach or Ge'ulah, redemption-oriented version or understanding of who Eliyahu Navi is. So let's talk for a minute about the fifth cup. We have, in source 15, the psukim, which relate to what we call the four lishonot of Ge'ulah, the four languages or passages or phrases of redemption. And these are, I have them in Hebrew and in English, v'hotzeiti, v'hitzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti. I have two others on there, I'll mention both those in a moment. And the Gemara, Masechet Pesachim, Mishnah, the Gemara, discuss the obligation to have four cups of wine. And these four cups of wine were told in 16. You have Rashi there who says, "Keneged arba lishonei geula." The reason why we have four cups of wine, each cup is reflective of one of these languages of redemption. Each language of redemption is a different stage of redemption. And those are the four cups that we are obligated to have as a commemoration or reenactment, if you want to go that direction, of the Geula itself, of the redemption from Egypt itself. What happens next is the Gemara discusses at what point do we drink these different cups. So in source 17, you have a Gemara in Psachim on Kuf Yurchet, and the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Revi Go'omer Allah Vida Halel, Ve'omer Halel Gadol. So the Gemara says the fourth cup is the cup that you're going to finish the Hallel. So if you go through the, sing your Seder song, Kadesh Ruchatz, Karpas Achatz, you get all the way to the end. Right, what happens at the end? Shulchan Aruch, Tzafun Barech Halel Nirtza. Halel is like the second last thing we do. It's even after benching. We finish the Halel. It's called the Halel Agadol. And we have a cup of wine that we drink at the end of that Halel.
Is that Halel not a continuation from the earlier Halel, or we just don't? The earlier Halel means nothing. Mm-hmm. Later Halel means nothing.
It's a continuation. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not the end. It's like sort of a break for two.
Yeah. Yes. Essentially. But we add. It's not regular Halel. It has Nishma. It has all these other parts to it, right? The Rif and other Rishonim as well, the Rambam and the Ravad in sources 18 and 19, all have a different version, meaning a different text. And the actual text of their passage of the Gemara is different. And this is where we get the fifth cup from. It comes from this Gemara. The fifth cup is based on the Rif. The Rif has a text. If you look here in source 17, the Rif says, Ravi gomer lava de halva, omer lava birkat shir, my birkat shir. What is the birkat shir? What is the blessing of song? Rabbi Huda amar yehalalucha, Rabbi Yochanan amar nishma kochai, which are both paragraphs that we say in the Halel HaGadol on Seder night. Tanu Rabbanan, Chamishi Omer Alav Halel HaGadol. So that Gemara, which said the fourth cup is the one that we finish the Halel on, there's a version in the Rif that says it's the fifth cup that we finish the Halel on. So apparently in this understanding of the Gemara, there was actually five cups. Where do you get the five cups from? There's a fifth passage or a fifth reference to redemption in Shemot chapter 6, Shemot Perek Vav, Veheveti. We'll get back to that in a second. You just look in 19 and 20, in 18 and 19, the Rambam also references a fifth cup, most likely based on the Rif, who lived earlier than the Rambam, and the Ravad, who lived just, you know, almost a contemporary, just after the Rambam. He also references this passage of the Rif. So you have a number of Rishonim who talk about the fifth cup, and presumably we kind of follow the halacha like these Rishonim. We have a fifth cup, but what do we not do? We don't drink it. Our custom is not to drink the fifth cup. Our custom is just to mix it together, right, or pour it into the other cups or something like that. You add a little bit, and that's because the Torah in source 20 writes that it's not our practice to have the fifth cup. We follow the original, meaning there's a debate about which text of the Gemara is the correct debate. We're going to follow the commentaries that say the original one that we see that says there are only four cups, that's the one that we follow. But this idea of the fifth cup, if you look in 21 and 22, the Mishnah Berurah writes, we pour the fifth cup. Even though we're not drinking it, we pour the fifth cup because we believe in this idea of Eliyahu HaNavi. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah, it says, "Nohagim be'el medina limuza kos echad yoter mimesubim v'korinu to kos shel Eliyahu HaNavi." Because we believe that the Geula process, and this is really the main idea that I want to share today, the Geula process, the redemption process from Egypt, wasn't just about getting out of Mitzrayim and becoming free. It was about an ultimate goal, which was getting to the land of Israel. That's the Veheveti part, getting to the land of Israel, getting to the next stage of history with the Beit HaMikdash and with Mashiach. This idea is spelled a little differently by the Vilna Gaon, it's actually a perush on the Torah called Divrei Eliyahu, and he writes as follows. In the Yerushalmi, Chachamim tiknu arba kosa keneged arba lashonet shegeula, vehine anu nohagin shemozgin kos chamishi, we pour a fifth cup, we mix a fifth cup. Kornato koshel Eliyahu Navi. We call it the fifth cup of Eliyahu Navi. And the reason is because of the debate in the Gemara about the fifth cup. And no one decided. It's a very interesting comment. He says, the Gemara never comes to a conclusion about the fifth cup. Who's gonna tell us what the answer to that dispute is? Eliyahu Navi. Because Eliyahu Navi's job is to resolve the arguments, to resolve the sveikot. And that's why we are mosaic this kos. And we don't drink it because we're not sure what we're supposed to be doing with it. So let's get to a little bit of a conclusion here. We have something that we do at the Seder, where we talk about the history of the Jewish people. And that begins with what I like to call negative history, or machilini magnut, right? The avadim hayinu, Arami Oved Avi, that's here in the Gemara in Psachim 116a, source number 23. And we go until the end of that section. So the end of that section is source 24. The book of Dvarim is the passage that we read that a person says when they come to bring their Bikurim to Yerushalayim. In the time that there's a Beit HaMikdash, the first fruits that are brought to Yerushalayim. The end of that passage really ends in source 9, in Pasuk Tet, not in Pasuk Chet. And you have your discussion. You basically say, this is what happened to my ancestors. We went down to Egypt, and the Egyptians treated us cruelly. I'm there in verse 6. And they imposed hard labor upon us. So we cried to the Lord, so on and so forth. And the Lord brought us out from Egypt with a strong hand, outstretched arm. That's the part that we read. And then we spend a lot of time in the Haggadah talking about each, right? Talking about each word or few words. That's the part that people either read in English, or they run through really quickly, it's actually a really important part of the Haggadah. It's a really important part of the Seder, because that's the story of Jewish history. We're going through literally the story, and it goes in detail what happened to us. So there's something that's missing, because the Gemara seems to say that we go to the end of the section, yet we don't. What happens? There's the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Tet. I'm still in source 24. It says, he brought us to this place, he gave us the land flowing with milk and honey. We don't read that Pasuk, the part where we got to the land of Israel. It's kind of strange. It was left out of the Haggadah. It was left out of the text, even though it says we're supposed to read to the end of the section. So, one of the explanations given by the Netziv in source 25, the Emek Davar in his commentary, but on the Veheveti. So over there, there's a sixth language that's used. If you look back in source number, there was a 15. Okay, you have in the middle there, V'lakachti, I'll take you to me as a nation, I'll be God to you, and you will know that I'm the Lord your God. V'yadati. So the Netziv writes, this V'yadati or V'yadatem, that's another promise. And he says that's the fifth language of what's going to happen to us in the time of Geula. And he says that this is something that we're going to attain. It's like it's an intellectual or spiritual wisdom that we're going to attain in the time of redemption. And the reason why we don't have it in our Haggadah, this is how Rabbi Taub explained it, the reason why we don't have it in our Haggadah is because we haven't reached that time yet. We're living still in the time of the Galut. Is the Rambam in source 26, the Rambam has a text of the Haggadah, similar to the one that we have, there's a few differences, but one of the things that he does is in his opening lines, he writes, Nosach ha-Haggadah shenahu guba Yisrael bizman ha-Galut. Our Haggadah is the Haggadah of the exile. But the Haggadah of Eliyahu is the Haggadah of the Geula. It's the Haggadah of the redemption. And what Eliyahu HaNavi is meant to do at our Seder, at our Pesach experience, is he's meant to come and create an opportunity for us to think about the Geula. Think about what the Geula means. And as we said, one of Eliyahu HaNavi's roles is to resolve the Sveikot, to resolve the disputes, to resolve the things that people have arguments about. Now, when we say resolving an argument, it doesn't mean that he's going to say this one's right and this one's wrong. The way he explains it, it's very beautiful. He says the word in Hebrew that the Shonim use, what we do with the fifth cup is we're mosaic. Mosgin kos, what it literally meant in the time of the Gemara is that the wine was so strong, was so sharp, that they used to mix it with water, basically, to take away the strength of it. That's called mezigah. So you're mixing two things together. It doesn't mean that one exists and the other doesn't exist. They both coexist. And that's exactly Eliyahu Navi's role. He comes, part of the Geula process is not this one's right and this one's wrong. It's showing how the disparate parts all fit together in one place. It's the idea of the harmony of the Seder. It's Ibayot. Kushyot v'Ibayot. That's what it says. Tishbi Yitaretz Kushyot v'Ibayot.
That's a Havayot.
Havayot. Okay. Either way, This is something that we're meant to have in mind when we come to the Seder experience. The idea of achakelo, right, of waiting for Mashiach. That's the Gemara in Masechet Sukkah. There's Lamed Vav Tzadikim. Why are they called the Lamed Vav Tzadikim? Because their whole life is directed toward, and they're not thinking about anything else. They're not doing anything else. It's all directed toward achakelo. Now, achakelo, the message of achakelo is not just something that is for the holiest people. It's for every single Jew. We say, it's not enough to just believe. It has to be part of our day. It has to be part of our life. It has to be part of our practice. And that's the goal of bringing Eliyahu Navi to the table. So why is Eliyahu Navi the person that we want to focus on? So this part's just beautiful to me. We'll finish with this. The Beit Elohim, which was written by the Mabit, Rav Moshe ben Yosef, Ditrani, who's an Italian philosopher. He writes a book called the Beit Elohim. And in there he writes the reason why Eliyahu Navi, because he says if the Mashiach comes, an interesting question, Rabbi Tal brings this up. He says, it's an interesting, if Mashiach comes, we're going to have Triad HaMeitim, right? And we're going to have Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to have the Rambam, we're going to have all the greatest minds in Jewish history in one place. What are we going to need Eliyahu Navi for? To answer our questions. They'll be able to answer all of our questions. Good question, right? What's the idea behind it? What's the idea behind it? So he says that Eliyahu Navi, because he has this eternal nature to him, he has the broadest view of history. He has the broadest view of what the Jewish people have been through, what the issues at hand are, and he's able to understand it not just from the narrow 100 years of a person's life, 120 years in this earth. Eliyahu Navi sees it from the broader perspective, and because he sees it from the broader perspective, he's able to understand how all the different opinions, all the different ideas fit together in one place. And I'll just conclude by mentioning that there is a recent notion that people have spoken about in their Haggadot of not four sons, but five sons. And the fifth son is, I think maybe the Lubavitch Rebbe was one of the first people to talk about this. The fifth son is the son who doesn't come to the table, who doesn't come to the Seder table, doesn't come to enjoy the Pesach experience. And for different reasons, why that child is not there. But we mostly understand it to be someone who's just very, very, very disconnected from being interested in what's taking place around the Seder table, in the person's history, the person's identity, the person's connection. And Eliyahu HaNavi, his job, it's the fifth cup, right? What is the fifth cup? What's the geula? What's the redemption all about? It's this idea of all the Jews are going to be part of it. All the Jews are going to be part of it. In a way, we sit around the table. It's not selfish, but we take for granted the fact that we have these opportunities, that we have the ability to be together and to celebrate our traditions, to celebrate our people's history in this environment. But there's so many Jews who don't even realize that it's a possibility, don't even realize that it's something that they could be involved in. And that's, in a way, the redemption Haggadah. We talk about, you know, what's the ultimate goal of the Haggadah. The ultimate goal of the Haggadah is to get us to that place where we realize this isn't the final destination. It's L'shana Haba, B'Yerushalayim Habnuya. So we should be zocha to that day, that our Haggadah goes from a perspective of we're here and we're waiting and we're talking about all these ideas of redemption, that we should actually get there. We should actually get there. We should actually arrive to that day where we will once again sit in Yerushalayim and have a Seder together with the Pesach and the Matzah and the Marah. Wish you all Chag Sameach. Time is...